Welcome to the Brownline Church Podcast. My name is Vince Brackett. I am one of the pastors at Brownline Church. And if you are hearing this, I am on sabbatical right now with my family and away from the community for about 8 weeks of rest and recovery and trying to listen to God in a way that is outside of the weekly responsibilities of normal life. If you are somebody who has given financially to Brownline Church at some point, I am so grateful because it is your donations and gifts that allow our church to function at all and for the financial board to be able to offer me something as wonderful and humanizing as a sabbatical. So thank you. Here's our most recent Sunday message. Let us know what you think in Discord or shooting us an email, brownlinechurch@gmail.com, or share it with a friend if it helps you.
Well, good morning, everyone. We are continuing on in our Embracing Beliefs series this morning. So through this, we've been exploring the good and beautiful and sustaining beliefs that keep us going, that inspire us and offer us hope. There are definitely times where it's important to talk through the process of dismantling beliefs that are harmful or no longer helpful. But I think it's just as important to share the good things, what's keeping us going and what we cling to. These may be more recent developments for you, or they may be beliefs that have formed throughout your whole life. And it's been really fun to get to interview different people from our community as a part of this process. So you're not just hearing from me the whole time, but today we get to hear from Carol, which I'm so excited about. So Carol, could you introduce yourself a little bit?
Well, I am a wife, a mom, a grandma, a retired nurse, retired cross-cultural worker, and an apprentice to Jesus.
I like that introduction. Could you also just briefly share, I think so much of our beliefs and our process of coming to beliefs are shaped by the communities that we are a part of. So could you share a little bit about the faith communities and churches you've been a part of?
Well, I grew up in a fundamentalist evangelical, very conservative community.
You're good.
Okay. And also were part of a communal church for a while that was from Mennonite background. And also then most recently, we were part of the Evanston Vineyard. And here we are now.
Yeah. So today we are talking about belief in God's faithfulness, that God is faithful. And I would love if we could start at the very beginning, which is a very good place to start.
Yes, it is.
But could you tell us about how your childhood shaped your faith, your understanding of faithfulness?
Well, obviously I grew up in a faith-filled home. I would say that both my parents were pretty faithful. My father became a follower of Jesus when he was an adult in his 20s. My mom was raised in the faith. My dad was a very, very loving father. I'm very blessed for that. So I don't have trouble thinking about God as being loving. And my mom was a very faithful mom. And so, yeah, that passed on too. My father did die when I was very young. I was the oldest of four children, and I was nine. So obviously that affected me quite a bit. And it affected my faith walk, too, in some really important ways.
Yeah, and when we had talked before, prior to his death, you had talked a little bit about how he left the church that he was a part of.
He did for a little bit before he died. He and his best friend left our fundamentalist church and started going to a black church in the town we lived in. And I was too young to really understand that. I just accepted whatever my parents did. But it was really interesting in later years to think about that and what somewhat of a unusual step at that time that was for him.
Yeah. We'll come back definitely to how the loss of your father impacted some of your visions that we're going to talk about, the different key visions in your life. So as we were talking before, for you, God really reveals God's character through these just undeniable experiences of God's presence. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast just yesterday, actually, where they were interviewing Dale Allison, who's a writer and historian and theologian. And he was talking about how he was talking about these like mystical vision-like experiences that he has had. And he said this statement that really stuck with me. He said, "I had no words for it then. I have no words for it now other than God." Mm-hmm. And these kind of inexplainable things, whether you would call yourself a person of faith or really across the gamut. I mean, we see things like near-death experiences or powerful experiences at the end of your life. That these moments that just, they're no words, just undeniably God.
Yeah.
So I'd love to look at some of those specific moments for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there one that you'd like to start with?
Well, just to preface it with that, I'm a very visual person, and maybe God takes that into consideration when he gives these visions or whatever to some people, is that he knows that's the best way to get to us, is something that's really visual. I'm not a person that sits and mulls over ideas that much, but boy, if I see it, then it's very, very, very real. So let's see, what one would I start with? Well, this wasn't exactly a vision, but I guess I could talk about after the Billy Graham thing at the World's Fair when I was 13. So the World's Fair was in New York City that year, and my mom had just finished a year. This is after my father had died, and my mom had gone to the mission field. She was doing a year in San Jose, Costa Rica, and I was doing a year of eighth grade at the school that she was going to be teaching at after this year of language study. And my three younger siblings were with my grandparents up in Wheaton. So she had come back with me. We had gone to New Jersey first to see all the people that we used to live with. That's where I grew up with, by the way. That's where my father died. And the World's Fair was that year, and it was in New York City, and so they wanted to go because Billy Graham had a pavilion that year, and so that was what all the people from church wanted to go to. So we did that, and it was really new technology. It had this wraparound screen, so no matter where you were, it looked like Billy Graham was looking right into your eyes. And at the end, he said, "Do you know that you're saved?" And I saw him looking right into my eyes, and I suddenly thought, well, I thought so, but I don't know. You know, I was like so scared from that moment on. It lasted for 4 months. I was afraid to go to sleep. I didn't know whether I would, you know, I didn't know what the consequences of my not knowing this would be. But I did not, I kept reading the Bible. And at the end of this 4 months, I was reading in John, and I read the verse where Jesus says to the disciples, "Blessed are you." It was right after Thomas had put his fingers in his hands and his hand in his side. And he said, "Blessed are you because you've seen and believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And it was like, I read that verse and suddenly all my doubt was completely gone. And I knew, even as a 13-year-old, that that was a God thing, because I couldn't have talked myself into that state of belief. And I'd never had a doubt ever since then. I've had moments when I had doubts, lots of moments when I had doubts about myself and about the church and about all kinds of things, but I never had a doubt about God's love for me or God having drawn me into himself and into his salvation.
Yeah.
So that was probably the first time I had a sort of a numinous experience like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then another one that you talked about with me was the, I think it was the sonship course mm-hmm. that you were taking.
Yeah, yeah, and that was much later. Mm-hmm. I was probably 50 years old when I was taking that, and they were talking about God the Father, and all the different characteristics and everything, and somehow just in talking, I suddenly heard this thought go through my mind: the Father is the one who abandons. And I was so shocked to hear myself saying that. But I realized there was a part of me that really believed that, because my Father had abandoned me. He didn't want to. He didn't do it on purpose. But he was definitely gone, and it was probably the most eventful and consequential and tragic things of my childhood was losing my father. So when I realized then, because I'd always had no trouble praying to Jesus, but I never prayed to the Father. I never prayed to God. And that just totally changed right then when I realized that that's where it came from and that it wasn't true. The Father was not the one who abandons. My dad hadn't abandoned me on purpose, and God the Father had never abandoned me in all these years, or my family, my siblings, my mom. So, and that was another one of those where it was just, it was a done deal as soon as the thought hit me. It was just over and done. So.
Yeah. Caitlin Curtis, who's a Indigenous writer, talks about how stories can be cyclical and point to our evolving and mm-hmm. how we tell them over time and who we are over time mm-hmm. shifts and evolves. Mm-hmm. And I think that holding the long view of that experience, that this was something that happened early in your childhood and then found some later wrestling and redemption much later in life, it's really interesting how mm-hmm. that got reincorporated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think God is really faithful to do that. And, yes. and we don't know when it's going to happen, but he does it. He's faithful, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of times faithfulness looks like what we were singing this morning, that nothing is wasted.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
there can be meaning made out of these experiences.
Yeah.
That's just a beautiful truth to come out
yeah.
of this.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was another kind of key vision or set of visions, and you don't need to share specifics, but could you talk a little bit about Sarah?
Yeah, our fourth child, Sarah, was born with severe congenital heart defects, which we did not know until just before her first birthday. We just knew that she was not right. And she did, in fact, die when she was 14 months old. And that ushered in a period of 5 years, really, of intense grief for me. Even if you couldn't see it on the surface, that's what was going on inside. It's like your heart is hemorrhaging. You just feel like you're dying. Or that you are dead. I remember walking down the street one time in the fall and seeing a leaf being scuttling along on the by the wind on the sidewalk and thinking, that's me, God, that's me. But then, just to make that story a little quicker, I'll go to at the end of that 5 years when God really healed me. It was We were at a vineyard concert, not concert, conference with several other people from the vineyard, and Steve Nicholson said at the end of, in the evening, we had gathered together, he goes, "Well, I'm tired, I'm going to bed, but I think the rest of you should pray for Stephen and Carol." So I thought, well, that's interesting. So they prayed for us, and a really amazing thing happened during that prayer time, that God just showed me. Maybe I can describe this without falling into tears like I always do. But
you can fall into tears.
It's okay if I do. But anyway, they were praying for us, and all of a sudden I saw myself in a very dark enclosed box. Like, it could have been a huge cardboard box. It could have been a tomb. But it was completely dark, and I was in there. And then I was in there for a while during this prayer time. And then at a certain point in the prayer time, up on the roof of this space, a trap door flew open, and this bright light flooded in. And then I saw 5-year-old Sarah's face peering down into the space and going, "Mom! Mom! It's okay! You can be alive!" And I was absolutely shocked back into life by that vision that God gave me. I think he knew that Sarah had to come with the tale, you know, to talk to me. And I was healed from that moment on. I miss her still, all these years later, but it's not an oppressive grief, and it never was after that moment. So God was incredibly gracious.
Yeah, that's the word I was going to use. This idea in the podcast that I mentioned earlier, they are talking about how visions or experiences like this of God's presence are often out of the blue. They're not often like sought after. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to set up the perfect climate to have the perfect type of experience or encounter, maybe is a word someone would use. But that is grace.
Yeah.
The surprising gift, to name it as God's grace, I think is really powerful.
Yeah. There were a lot of others during that whole time when she was sick, and then during those 5 years, God just gave me quite a series of very poignant visions that were all part of that coming to terms with the whole thing in my life of losing a child and then being healed of that grief, so it could not poison my life anymore. So I won't describe all those different ones, but if you're curious, you can ask me. I'll tell you some other time.
How, as a whole, how has grief, I mean, you had the loss of your dad when you were young, you've had the loss of Sarah, how has grief shaped your understanding of faithfulness?
I think it's shaped my understanding of God's faithfulness, because God was there, and especially even as I got older and older and could look back. And, I didn't implode. My family didn't implode. My mom was amazing in spite of her deep grief on losing my father. So I think it really did. If I hadn't had those experiences, those were really lived experiences of God's enormous faithfulness in the midst of a lot of pain and trauma.
Yeah. So. And then just, there's one more key vision that we had talked about that was more recent during an experience of Emmanuel prayer. Mm. Could you talk about that one too?
Yeah. Some of you might remember the Sunday that Anna Cruz was leading us in Emmanuel prayer. And so I was just following her leading in the prayer time, and I suddenly heard God say, you just love my creation so much and the beauty of my creation, and I just want you to know that I made it all for you. I just kind of all for me? And he said, yeah, all for you. And I knew even as God said that he made it all for everyone else too. But I had never thought of it being made with just me in his mind. And that's what I experienced then. And I was just so overcome with his love and graciousness and desire to gift us with himself and his good things. So yeah, it's a really good one.
Yeah, something Pastor Judy Peterson, I've heard her say many times, is that I'm God's favorite just like everyone else is.
Yeah, that's it.
And so I love the specificity of that.
Yeah.
And actually for the image this week that I chose, it was an icon of the parable of the mustard seed, just this beautiful tree with birds in it and deep roots. And I thought of you because of your love of creation and because of this story. And in this parable, Jesus says that the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. And he talks about how, though it's the smallest of all the seeds, it has this potential to become this big, beautiful tree with birds that come and perch in its branches. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a beautiful image for faithfulness, that either us being faithful or understanding God's faithfulness can feel like a massive undertaking. Mm-hmm. But it really is just made up of the smallest of moments of staying present and committing to being curious. This all just contributes to more of a vision of the beauty and transformation for the world.
Yeah,
it really does.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about, too, as we're talking about stories as evolving and how we evolve over time and everything, you've had these visions that are so vivid, and you've had experiences of God that are so vivid and point you to this characteristic of God as faithful. Can you talk about how more recently you've been able to hold kind of the whole scope of your life when you're thinking of that, or the very real possibilities that may come from your life?
Yeah, I'm at an age, 74 next February, just for make it specific, where I think about my death and the very real possibility of the illness and decay that, believe me, I can already feel starting in my body. So knowing and thinking about faithfulness and God's faithfulness to me and to those that I love all through these years, in spite of suffering that was along the way for different ones, I think about facing death with that understanding of God's faithfulness to me and that I can depend on it, that hesed love, steadfast, loyal love. And one little thing, you know, Sarah was very, very sick, obviously, and took a lot of care. And then 10 years later, we did foster care for a while, and one of the babies that we took care of was very disabled. And it was quite difficult. It was a difficult time. And I remember thinking later, not a lot later, only a little later, that Sarah and Tatiana had taught me more about God's character than any of my healthy children were able to. Mm-hmm. And it just was, for me, so redemptive to understand that, that this difficult time was actually a really precious teaching time in my life. And so I remember that, and I remember how true it was. And I think about, you know, my mother died in dementia after lingering for several years in that state, and I could, too, myself. And so I think about Tatiana and Sarah and how God used them in my life. And I just think, well, I really want to just accept that and let God bless somebody else with a better understanding of himself through taking care of me if they have to. That's not an easy thought to come to at all, but I do really believe it, and I want to hold on to it.
Yeah. So it's vulnerable to believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
And you've always been someone who feels things very deeply and carries a lot for others. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it's interesting, whether it's this pride in your own role of taking care of other people, to have that be transformed into thinking through how you may need to be taken care of.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I was always the one that did everything and was dependent on, you know. And, I mean, I don't do everything even now, and I can't always be dependent upon anymore. But that will only get more so with time. And it is giving up that idea of being so great. Mm-hmm. That's pretty important, too. I was thinking about this morning, that Richard Rohr said one time, he asks God every day for a grand humiliation, just to keep his humility in step. And we read that and we went, ooh, every day a grand humiliation.
I don't know if I can handle grand.
Yeah. It's actually been kind of helpful, because when it happens now, I sit there and go, ooh, and I go, oh, wait, that's just my grand humiliation for the day. I can accept that.
I love that. And I love, too, that this vulnerability and humility, just accepting the inevitable that you're not always going to be strong and able to hold things together, that is a part of faithfulness. It's not you no longer being faithful to what you feel you need to do.
Yeah.
That faithfulness looks different for different people. How we experience God, what we feel driven to do in the world, how we participate in love, all of those different things are different for people.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we think of the closeness of God as only being, like, quote unquote, on good terms with God.
Yeah.
This confident and settled relationship that's untouchable. But you also have to get really close to God in order to wrestle. Wrestling is very intimate. You get real up close. And I think that the doubts or the moments of realizing I'm not as physically strong as I used to be, or it's harder for me to do certain things, I think that doesn't counteract faithfulness, because it's still showing up. Mm-hmm. And there's a willingness to be creative of, if I can't do this, then now what can I do? Mm-hmm. What feels right now?
Yeah, yeah.
And that God is with us in that whole process.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there any kind of final encouragements that you want to leave us with around this idea of living faithfully or understanding God's faithfulness?
Just how big God is. You know, when Sarah was, well, after she died and during those years, I read Job again and again, and Psalm 42 again and again. And the thing I came away with was just kind of like Job, you know, wrestling with God and then finally saying, I didn't get it. I'm too small. I didn't understand. You are huge and amazing, and I worship you and I trust you. And that's kind of where I came out too.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to stay.
So. Yeah. Thank you so much for this.
You're welcome.
I'm going to close us with prayer. So if you would get comfortable in your seat, take a moment to close your eyes. or if you want to focus your gaze on a spot in the room to kind of help settle yourself. We'll take a few deep breaths together. God, I thank you for the gift of storytelling. All of the embodied ways of experiencing your presence that we get to see unfold in the past and keep unfolding in the future. I'm grateful for the wide array of ways that we can experience and witness to your presence in the world. We may have no words for it then, we may have no words for it now, but God, naming the love we see, naming the trajectory of justice, naming the experiences of being surrounded by community, would your faithfulness, the steadiest of your loving character and action in the world, encourage us to respond in faithful ways? Mustard seed by mustard seed. Showing up in confidence, showing up to wrestle, showing up just plain curious. Seeing you as faithful, not because you are a God who needs an ego boost, but because we can't help but long to increase love and beauty in the world. It is a gift to be faithful, not a burden. A gift and such a grace. You take a moment to take a few more deep breaths. God, would you settle us? Would you collect us? Would we experience your love? Amen.